Hi there, and welcome to Insomnia Open Class, in which we answer questions from the Natto Nation, from our community. Hope you're doing really well today, and welcome. In fact, as I'm saying this, there's probably nobody hearing this, but if you're watching after the fact, welcome. And if you happen to be here live, then feel free to ask questions in the comments, and I will reply to them. We'll be live here for about 20, 25 minutes or something like that. And firstly, do we have any announcements? Not really, no announcements. So I'll just, as we wait for some questions to come in, share something that's been on my mind lately. And as it seems to happen quite frequently, it's you know, clients that I've spoken, that I speak to or interact with that give me ideas for things I want to share here with the community. And yet again, I learned something from a client. And, you know, someone I worked with lately told me that she had gotten into the habit of waking up in the morning, grabbing her phone, and giving herself a grade depending on what time it was. So this is someone who goes to bed pretty early. So if she, you know, woke up at, let's say, 4, she would give herself like an A, and maybe waking up at 3 would be like a B, and like anything earlier than that would be like a fail, you know, something like that. So basically, she'd got into the habit of like giving herself like a passing or failing grade or something in between. Like, but my point here is that she had started thinking of her sleep in terms of like pass fail. And grading herself in that way. And we can easily see how that leads to struggle, and we can easily see how that just happens also, right? It's so natural that it happens when we start to think of sleep as something we need to achieve, something we can do. Then of course we wanna do that. You know, we really wanna be able to do that. And it feels natural for us to say like, okay, we're gonna reward ourselves with a good grade when we sleep, and we're gonna punish ourselves with that. We're like, give ourselves a poor grade when we don't sleep so we can get where we want to be. But of course, it's not how that doesn't happen in the context of sleep, because sleep is passive. It's something that just happens when we don't try to control it, right? So when we give ourselves like a passing grade, at least a performance anxiety, because we're like, okay, how can I get this grade again? And when we give ourselves a failing grade, that leads to performance anxiety and self-criticism. Why can't I get it? What's wrong with me? Like, I have to get a better grade, right? So I think if you recognize this, if it sounds familiar to you, then that's always helpful, because you know you're not alone. And you can also see that there's an invitation here to really deploy self-compassion and gentleness with oneself, and not grade ourselves, not give ourselves grades and leave that. And when we're not grading ourselves, and we're not giving ourselves, you know, any marks or anything like that, then things get easier and easier. So I just want to share that. And we already have several questions here, so let's jump in. Libby is with us, and I remember Libby used to be in almost every open class a while back, and glad to have you back here, Libby. And she says the following: is it a sign of progress if my insomnia changed forms? I was originally dealing with non-refreshing sleep, but within the last week or so, I've suddenly started struggling with sleep maintenance. Also, I can't seem to shake the belief that I can't be a good mom if I haven't slept well. I think this is really interfering with me truly getting away from wanting to force sleep. So two questions from Libby: is it a sign of progress when, you know, there's a change? And also an insight that the pressure of like, I have to sleep to be a good mom is leading to a lot of struggle. And starting on the second one there, I think this is so common and so true. I think all of us parents, we easily get into these struggles where we think, I have to do this to be a good parent. And a very common scenario is a mom who thinks, I have to sleep so that I feel refreshed, I can focus, and I can be present for my child, and I can be a good mom. And just seeing this is so very helpful, because then we understand that, this idea that I have to sleep to be a good mom is creating the struggle. That alone is so helpful. And then, of course, you know, what we want is we want to see the struggle fade. And, you know, our instinct or like our first reaction can be like, okay, I just have to sleep more then. I have to sleep more so that I can be that good mom. But then we see that's just more pressure, right? Then we put more pressure on sleep. We put even more on a pedestal, and we're going to have even more struggle sleeping, and we're going to be even more hard on ourselves, etc. So we see that, okay, I can't control sleep. I can't like make myself sleep more. So what can I do? Well, we can really take a look at what does it mean to be a good mom? What does it mean to be a good parent? We have all kinds of ideas, right? I have to be this and this and this and that to be a good parent. But if we look at it from a child's perspective, like, what does a child really truly need, right? They need shelter, they need food, and they need to know that they're loved, right? And that doesn't require so much, really, from our parental side. Like, a child knows that they're loved. And if we love them, we show that in so many ways. And, you know, so I think it is so, so true. I think it's 100% true that we can be a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful mom, even if we don't sleep that much, because we can still show a kid that we love them, that we're there for them, and that we care them, you know? And another aspect of this is like perfectionism, that we often think that things have to be exactly like this, so I don't give myself a pass, like a failing grade. But, you know, leaving perfectionism is also part of this that I think can be so, so helpful. Now, let's go back to the first question here, like, is it a sign of progress if my insomnia changed forms? I will say this, that I think there's very much progress when somebody sees the change in insomnia and thinks that this may be progress, right? I think that in itself can be, like, that's really, really nice to see, because when we have been in a state of fear, often kind of our instinctive, natural, like, first reaction is to think this is not good, this is bad, this is danger, right? So the most common way I get this question is somebody who says, hey, Daniel, I used to have sleep onset insomnia, but now it's changed. Now I have sleep maintenance insomnia. You know, I used to have trouble falling asleep, but now I wake up and can't sleep. Oh my gosh, what's wrong? What am I doing wrong, right? There's the most common way I get this question is in the context of somebody who's scared. Something has changed and they're scared. Everything that's changing seems scary. And I think the teaching there is to see that there's really nothing different between when we have trouble falling asleep, staying asleep, or we just feel unrefreshed. They all come from the same place. When we're so scared, we're really scared of not falling asleep in the evening, we have trouble falling asleep in the evening. If we're really scared of waking up and being awake, then we have trouble staying asleep. If we have this like hyper arousal, we're just like in general a heightened state of alertness, and we have this hyper sleep where we don't even know what's happening, like time just skips ahead and we feel unrefreshed. Well, that's just another manifestation. So I think it is a really nice sign of progress when our thinking is this could be a good thing, right? Because then that shows that fear is fading away, and that's really, really encouraging. So that made me happy to read. Hope that makes sense, Libby. Let's look at Mature Man, who is back. I think Mature Man was here last week as well. Hello, Mature Man. Mature Man. What am I talking about? Maturo Miro says, hello, Daniel. What is the best way to counteract observing the mind against sleeping? It is impossible to turn off the mind. I can remember that I used to drift off before sleep and then fall asleep. Secondly, what is the best course of action when not feeling tired? I use a timeless sleep window from 10:30 to 6:30. I relax in bed and eventually fall asleep. Is the process okay? Okay. So let's take a look at this. When, you know, kind of a general teaching point is that when we want peace, our means need to be peaceful. It's supposedly a Martin Luther King Jr. Quote. I haven't verified that. It sounds like something he would maybe say. Again, when we want peace, our means have to be peaceful. And I think we all want peace, you know, peaceful sleep, peace of mind. That is something that is very nice and that we all want to experience. So with that in mind, when we use things, when we use words like battle, fight, overcome, then we see that, oh, I'm approaching this in an aggressive way. You know, I'm approaching this in a forceful way. My means are not peaceful, and therefore we don't see peace. And that's the first thing that comes up to me when I read something like this. What is the best way to counteract observing the mind against sleeping? Is that we're trying to control something. We're trying to force something, and seeing that can be so helpful. We see that, aha, I'm approaching this as a battle, as a struggle, as a fight, that automatically leads to insight, and that fight, that struggle starts to fade out, and then then we have that peace that we want. And as Maturo Miro says here, it is impossible to turn off the mind. It is very, very true. That is literally, that is very true. Anyone who has tried will know more than anyone else that is true, that we cannot turn off the mind. But what we can do, of course, is to just let whatever thoughts and feelings and ideas happen, right? You know, to see them, okay, that was an idea, that was a thought, and then we are just in that observing mode, and we're not, you know, I understand the question here is like, how can I not be like, oh, I have to observe the moment of sleep and see what happens or not? That to me is not necessarily like the observing mind. That's more like a problem-solving mind, like doing mind, because you're trying to fix something. But when we sort of deploy the observing mind, and we can see that, oh, I'm starting to observe falling asleep, then can we just be like, okay, interesting. And then we're in that observing mindset, if you will. And then we're just in that observing mindset. We see thoughts come, thoughts go. Then there's no struggle, because thoughts only become persistent when we try to stop them. Emotions only stick around when we try to force them away, right? So I think that can be really, really helpful. And similarly, what's the best course of action when not feeling tired? Like, there's an idea here that there's something I can do to not feel tired. I have to find what to do. Let me do that, which is also sort of forceful and a little bit aggressive way to approach things. And then again, when we want peace, our means need to be peaceful to arrive there. So I think, saying that I'm going to stop checking the time at 10:30 and I'm going to get up at 6:30 and that's all, and then let whatever happens. I think that's really, really nice. Actually, now that I read it again, I see that, okay, that, you know, it wasn't so much about I don't want to feel tired. It's like, what should I do when I'm not feeling tired? And now I understand this fully, Maturo Miro. And the answer to that would be like, yeah, we can't force ourselves to feel tired. So when we do something we like to do, then, you know, that sleepiness naturally comes to us, because when we're not trying to force ourselves to feel sleepy, then the hyperarousal goes down and we start actually feeling sleepy. So yeah, just doing what we like to do, I think, is super, super helpful. All right, so let's take a look at What's Up Fool, who says, hi, Daniel. I found your approach on how to approach insomnia in March this year, and I've definitely been better since. I had stretches of pre-insomnia sleep, which until now have been always followed by a speed bump. Like today, I find myself in a speed bump again. Last night, I was pretty frightened, although I know that I will always be fine in the end. I can handle my days easily, even if I feel exhausted. Still, my body sends me strong fear signals pretty much every day. I'm wondering which piece I am still missing after all these months, until my mind also understands what is actually going on. Sometimes it feels like it's just impossible to overcome this issue. What we say, it is common that it can take this long. Thanks so much for your work. So, the first thing that comes to mind here is like, actually something I learned from Sasha Stevens, author of The Effortless Sleep Method and Bedtime Stories for Insomnia, which the second one, I think, my favorite, actually. But anyways, she says, I believe it is in Bedtime Stories for Insomnia. She says that she often gets the question, like, what am I doing wrong? You know? And the answer she has then is like, only one thing, thinking that you're doing something wrong, right? And it sounds kind of like silly or just like a mind trick or whatever, but I think this is so true. Like, when we're thinking, what am I doing wrong? Then that's the only thing we're doing, quote unquote, wrong, because we have an idea that there is a right way and a wrong way, and we have to find the right way. Similarly, when somebody asks, like, you know, what part of the puzzle, like, am I missing? Well, the only thing that we're missing then is that we think that there's a missing piece, you know, similar idea. So it is that search for the right way, or search for the missing part of the puzzle, the thing that's going to deliver us, that is actually the struggle. That's actually that keeps us in the loop. And it's tricky, it's paradoxical, but I do believe that it's when we abandon that attempt to like get further ahead, we abandon the attempt at like, you know, speed things up and things like that, then we think things really get easy. And And yeah, what is this process like of leaving insomnia? Well, it is a bumpy one. I'm so glad that you found things getting easier since you came across our channel here. But yes, the mind, like once it's gotten scared, it takes a while before it gets unscared. And that's, again, very, very natural, because if we have been in one scary situation and we really thought like, I'm in danger here, it's the brain isn't designed to just go like, oh, no, it's fine. Because like in back in the day, and if you look at this evolutionary perspective, that may be quite dangerous. So becoming scared is fast, but becoming unscared is kind of like a process. And it's very normal that there are ups and downs and things like that. Nothing really strange. And my body's still sending me strong fear signals. Yeah, it's again like it has, once it's been scared, there will be some residual fear there for a while. And again, like with those signals or messages from our brain, it's when we try to stop a message. You're like, oh no, I don't want to hear this. Then the brain is going to be like, oh, you got to hear this. Like it tries to amplify it. But when we're just like aware, like, oh yeah, this is a speed bump. That's normal. This is a fear signal. Yeah, I'm hearing it. I'm willing to hear it. I'm willing to experience it. Message has been received. And then the messaging fades. So I think that could be a really nice way to approach this. All right, let's go to another one. FCV says, I've been doing sleep restriction for 5 weeks, but I've seen little progress with it. Early morning awakenings increased, and that gave me anxiety that interferes with my sleep. Can CBTI still work? Last question. I ended up going to the psychiatrist after a string of bad nights. He prescribed me clonazepam for anxiety. Can I still do CBTI and sleep restriction with medications? Yeah, you know, FCV, if you look, it's very interesting. In this book here, well, take this down so you can see Tales of Courage. It is a 26 first-hand accounts of insomnia ends, like, you know, interviews with 26 people who have gone through the journey and have seen it end, you know? And out of those 26, I'm not exaggerating if I'm saying that at least 22 tried CBT and or CBTI and found that it actually made them more anxious. You know, maybe the education piece helped a little bit. Maybe for a while they felt a little easier. Things got a little better, but ultimately the struggle came back. It was not the solution. So I think CBTI is very, very, very tricky, because there's a problem that I like to call implied controllability. And, you know, a CBTI therapist is not going to say like, hey, if you can control your sleep, just do this and you'll sleep this much. But that message is sort of implied. When somebody says, oh, you got to stay up this late and get up this early, and then we're going to calculate your sleep efficiency, then we're going to titrate the sleep window depending on what number we get, that implies that sleep can be controlled. And same thing with stimulus control. You know, we say like, oh, you have to get out of the bed and only go back when you feel sleepy, so we can reassociate the bed with sleep. That implies controllability. And it's the attempt to control sleep that creates insomnia. So I think CBTI is very, very tricky. So I think, you know, can CBTI still work? I think whenever we're looking for something that works in the sense that it makes us sleep, then we're still going to have insomnia. But when we're educating ourselves and understanding that, you know, the pursuit of something that works is why I'm struggling, then things change and the insomnia fades away. And, you know, when it comes to medications and CBTI, I learned this from, Martin Reed, insomnia coach Martin Reed. He said that he sees no problems with medications, you know, in his approach, you know. And he said that if somebody is on a medication, that's fine. If they're not on a medication, that's fine. The tricky thing can be if somebody is like using some medication like conditionally. They're like trying, like, let's see if I can sleep. Let me take it. Oh, I take half now. I take double dose now. That can be quite quite tricky, because it can keep us from seeing that the medications really doesn't have anything to do with if we sleep well or not. So I think in very similar terms that somebody's on medications, no problem, as long as they don't feel conflicted about it. If they think of it as kind of like a vitamin, we take this and it can help us. We don't ponder it. We don't judge ourselves. We don't, you know, we're not hard on ourselves. No problem. If somebody's not taking something, no problem. If somebody's sort of experimenting, like, let me see, let me try, that can be tricky. All right. So Salome is here with us as well and says, hi, folks. Just joined now. Sorry for being late. No problem. My question is, what's your stance on distraction behaviors for falling asleep? I fall asleep so much easier with a TV, though I find it limiting. Thanks. Yeah, you know, if you go back to like my videos from like, I don't know, a year and a half ago, I used to actually say like, oh, just distract yourself. You know, my idea back then was like, you know, insomnia happens when we pay when we're giving sleep so much attention that if we just divert that attention to something else, then we'll be fine. So it's just like, just distract yourself. But there's a little bit of a problem there, because in the word distraction, there's intent. There's intent to like, okay, I'm going to distract myself. I'm going to try to make myself focus in this way so I don't focus in that way. And that can be quite tricky, because then we can, you know, be in this kind of struggle again, this forceful way, like I'm trying to make myself this look this way, but then we want to look that way. No, look this way. No, I want to look that way. It becomes this effort again. So I think rather than like looking for something to distract ourselves, I think it's more helpful to look for something that we actually truly would like to do, like a TV show that we really enjoy, that we like, that has inherent value to us, because then we're not in a struggle. Then we're just like, I'm just watching TV because I like it. And it also happens to take our attention in that direction. That's nice, but we're not trying to do something to distract ourselves so that we sleep, which is an effort. So I think that that can be really nice. But yeah, I don't think there's any problem whatsoever to watch TV. I watch Netflix or something like that with my wife right up until we fall asleep. And I think most people do that. And yeah, I find it limiting. I think when we're doing something with an intent to kind of achieve sleep, then it can be limiting because we're not enjoying it. We're just in this effort of trying to make something happen again. All right, hope that helps. And Amy is here, says, hi, Daniel. My struggle is it's hard to fall back asleep. I wake up at least 4 to 5 times throughout the night, which makes me so exhausted in the mornings. I'm such a light sleeper too. I feel I never get any deep sleep and I dream so much, but in a light sleeping mode, if that makes sense. I'm getting so frustrated. Amy, sorry to hear this, of course, but we have a whole playlist on like unrefreshing sleep. That playlist, I think, can be really, really helpful. And, you know, when I hear this, one thing that comes to mind is like, something can really only be hard if we're trying to do it. You know, it sounds silly, but if we're not trying to like lift a chair, it cannot be hard, right? Because we're not even trying to do it. And so same thing with sleep. Sleep can only, like, it can only be hard to sleep if we're trying to sleep. If we're not trying to sleep, then it really cannot be hard because we didn't try anything at all, right? So starting to see these things can be really helpful, because then we see our own efforts. We see that, oh, I think of it as hard. Oh, that just shows that I'm trying to achieve something. And that's something that can, like, when we see that, it can be really, really helpful. And it can also be so helpful to see that we can actually, like, if we imagine that we, we had a couple of nights where we didn't sleep much at all, we feel like really tired and unrefreshed and things of that nature. But then we learned something on one of these days that we learned, like, we literally won the lottery. We won like $50 million or something. And we're probably so excited that we forgot all about like feeling unrefreshed. We feel like so excited. And it's just a silly example, but it shows us that how we think about a situation matters much more than exactly how many hours we slept or how many times we woke up. Oftentimes this feeling of just being unrefreshed, it's more of an emotional thing. It's like we judge ourselves, like, I woke up 5 hours and I only got 3 hours of sleep. I'm terrible. What's wrong with me? Why can't I get this right? What's going to happen today? Those thoughts lead to so much fatigue, emotional fatigue, that we feel unrefreshed, and seeing that can be really, really helpful. Which playlist will that be that you mentioned? It's called Unrefreshing Sleep, is that the playlist. So we will end here. It's so nice having you all here. Hope it brought you lots of value. And if you are finding your way to where you want to be based on the content here, that is amazing. Let us know. That said, it can be tricky. If you would like us to help you put the pieces together so that you arrive where you want to be a little bit sooner, a little bit easier, then please visit our website and find a coaching option that works for you. And if you join, then we can't wait to see you on the other side. With that said, hope you have a wonderful day, and look forward to having you back soon. Bye for now.